Ball in Play 2, presented by DraftKings, kicks off on May 5th. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to catch Game 1. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code WAREHOUSE. That's promo code WAREHOUSE only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.
Okay, welcome back to Talkin' Knicks. I'm Tom Piccolo, coming to you less than 24 hours removed from... It was a tough one. The Knicks got absolutely dominated in Game 2 in Cleveland by a score of 90-107. I think it was a little worse than the score even indicated. I'm joined in studio today by special guest. We'll get to him in a minute. We're going to talk about this disgusting game. So let's do it. Let's talk Knicks. All right. I am joined by the producer of this show. It has been a minute since he's been on the podcast, but he's also a co-host. It's BBD, Big Baby David. Biebs, how are you?
Tom, wish I was here under better circumstances. Knicks got shellacked.
They did do that.
They did.
I mean, did you have any takes about Game 1 that you kind of had harbored that you weren't able to get off because you weren't able to join?
Most of them were about just how good a win that was, because all the obvious reasons you win one on the road, but particularly against this Cavs team that is so much better at home than on the road, and the importance of any playoff series to get a road win under your belt. But yeah, they all feel a little moot, and or they bleed into thoughts on just this game.
Yeah, I would have rather talked about that, but here we are. So we both watched Game 2. I did tap out after three quarters. I thought that the competitive portion of the game was over, and I was right. I would check the box score just to see if anything was going on in that fourth quarter, and it appeared that nothing of value or you know, worth talking about really transpired. So we can just talk about kind of the first half, the first three quarters, and what went wrong in that competitive portion. You know, it started out pretty good. I want to say that at one time the score was like, was it 12-5? Was it even better than that? There was like...
I know the Knicks at least were up like 12-6 at one point. We can get an exact number on that. But no, overall, like, that first quarter was good. Knicks finish it giving up a little run to the Cavs, but they're only down three after the first. After that, I mean, on paper, sure, that third quarter was also fine, and the Knicks actually do win the fourth quarter, but really from there it was all Cleveland, and like you alluded to, you know, they barely get to 90 points in this game, and that's with a lot of garbage time. So
yeah, and I think, you know, coming into this game, there was a lot of talk on the Cavs side about just the physicality of New York, of the Knicks bigs in particular, and how they just out hustled them, just were too strong. It led to a rebounding advantage in that Game 1, and it also was a turnover advantage in Game 1, mm-hmm. and the script really flipped in Game 2 in a major way. The Knicks had just a ton of turnovers, especially in the competitive part of this game. I want to say they finished the game each with 17, but we'll keep having to make that distinction that in the first half, I don't think it was even particularly close, and the turnovers that the Knicks did have were very damaging. But just that level of physicality was completely different, right? The Cavs actually came to play in this one.
They clearly went home after Game 1 and made the adjustment between putting pressure on Brunson and really everybody. They were much more physical. Like you said, a lot of the team stats, like turnovers, the free throw differential, which was cited in a lot of group chats. By the end of the game, it actually doesn't look that bad, but during the competitive portion, it was a rather large disparity.
And you brought up Brunson, so I think this does start with him, because he kind of sets the tone. He certainly sets the tone for the offense as the point guard, and it's his job to not only to create opportunities to score for himself, but for his teammates. And I think that largely it was a failure on his part. And I think that a lot of Knicks fans would then say, well, look at his teammates. Like, how could he have any trust in your RJ Barretts, your Quentin Grimes, your Emmanuel Quickleys, when these guys couldn't hit for anything? And even, you know, Randall, I think his shooting line looks okay, but he was really, really bad in this game. He had finished with six turnovers. His defense was just non-existent. But then even on the offensive end, his decision-making was really questionable. So I don't know. Where do you land as far as, like, putting the blame is such a harsh word, but, like, where does it fall on Brunson's shoulders, just the Knicks' struggles offensively?
Look, he ultimately was still the best player on the Knicks, so it's hard. I don't want to say I blame him, but early on he was more aggressive than he typically is on offense. As the point guard, it's kind of your job to get as many guys involved as possible. I know we're looking for RJ, Grimes, and Quickly, like that trio in particular. We're looking for them to contribute anything, and they... RJ, I guess, technically of the three is contributing the most positives.
He's certainly been the most aggressive
of the
looking
three.
Looking for a shot.
He's the closest there, but at the end of the day, even though he hasn't made the most of the opportunity, like Quentin Grimes only gets two shots in this game. That's
a problem. I mean,
that's not acceptable, and I don't know whose fault that is besides Grimes himself not getting either open enough or whatever, other than just Brunson not getting him any sort of early looks to try to get into a rhythm as one of our best floor spreaders.
I think that's right. I mean, Grimes, for the most part, like, we know that he relies on others to create looks for himself, right? He's not out there generating...
Pretty rare.
Yeah, he's not out there generating a bunch of his looks. Like, usually when he is putting the ball on the floor, it's to attack a closeout, it's to get to the rim, or dump it off to a big. And, I mean, he's just been completely negated...
Just really a non-factor so far.
Completely. And I do think that falls on Brunson to an extent. So there were, like you mentioned, the Cavs were super aggressive defending Brunson. They were, like, hard trapping him. And in those cases, it's on the point guard to get rid of the ball early, right? And he just simply wasn't doing that. Like, he was holding on to it for too long. He was, you know, kind of backing it out, or would have his back turned to the defense and was unable to make the right first pass. But even when he did make the right first pass, he would, like, hit Mitchell Robinson, for example, and Mitch would just hold onto the ball until the Cavs defense was able to recover. Yeah. Julius Randle as well, such a slow decision maker. No one was able to even take advantage of these advantages created by Brunson getting double teamed. So it's really on everybody. Like
that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, as much as, sure, singularly we're putting the most blame on him, it comes from a place of knowing what he's capable of and what he did in game one and how smart he typically is. But in this game, even when he passed it off to people, nobody else did anything, or nobody did anything to really help that situation. There's a couple Mitch screens or dumps to him that eventually either he gets trapped or just get it back to Brunson. Like, Just nobody was doing him any favors. So to an extent, I understand why he played a little bit of hero ball early. And if a couple of those shots fall, it helps. But nobody could do anything in this one.
Yeah, we pointed to Grimes, just two field goal attempts. Mitchell Robinson as well relies on other people to create for him. And he only had two field goal attempts as well. He only had one offensive rebound, which is really tough for our offense. Our offense just completely relies on his ability to generate more opportunities. So the fact that the Cavs were able to nullify that is just a really tough look for our offense. And hopefully game three, he's able to flip that around. But, you know, Mitch and Grimes are both guys who feed off of the looks created by the primary ball handlers, by the playmakers, by your Brunsons and Julius Randles, even RJ Barrett's. None of them were able to do that. None of them were able to create those advantages or exploit them. And, I mean, that was the story of the game, right? Mm-hmm. So, there's only so much to really say about that. But I do think we're going to need to see there's some, like, easy stuff to clean up, right? Jalen Brunson's not going to shoot 1-for-8 from three again, right?
Yeah.
And then you look at the other guys, Grimes going 0-for-2, RJ going 0-for-3, which has kind of been kind of more expected. But even Obi going 1-for-4, like, these are got Quickly going 1-for-4. The Knicks are going to shoot better from three, but at the same time, like, there has to be more of an emphasis on getting the ball to move, because sometimes when guys start to miss shots, I tweeted this last night, like this Knicks team really does start to kind of lose trust in each other, and the ball just gets really sticky, and they do play hero ball, like you said. And that's just, it's something where you kind of have to keep making the right play regardless of whether the shot's going down or not.
Yeah, they've got to get just power through with that instance if they get off to another slow shooting night in game three. Yeah, I don't know.
Let's talk real quickly about Emmanuel quickly, because
that's kind of who I was hoping we'd go to next, because it's the biggest problem on the team right now, the single thing that would change this series the most.
He's a dynamic player on both sides of the floor. He's been the Knicks' third best player all season, and he's been a complete no-show. And the box score stats, as you said, don't entirely reflect it. Like, he was 4 of 8 from the field. He was 3 of 4 from 2. That doesn't sound so bad. He had 12 points, just 1 turnover. It's not indicative of how he played, especially at the beginning there when the Knicks needed him to perform. He was really bad. He couldn't get a single inch. He couldn't create space for himself, which is something he has been so good at all season. He, you know, with his hesitation dribbles, with his kind of bursts, and he's able to like use kind of off speed. He kind of slows down, speeds up. He was able to just create no space against guys like Darius Garland, Caris LeVert, and it was a huge issue. Like, it led to turnovers. I know he had just the 1 turnover, but it was a pick 6. Yeah. And if he's not able to create for himself and others, it's really tough. It's just like he's
particularly coming off of game 1 where, again, he just could not buy a bucket, and he'll turn in a stinker like that. You know, so a little more frequently than you'd like, sure, but it's very atypical to turn in back to back bad performances like that. Fortunately, I know they happen in garbage time. We talked about the made buckets at the end. Hopefully that, just seeing a couple go in and then you get back home. You know, I guess the adage is like, home court's for like the role players, and he's still kind of that category. So hopefully getting home, having seen a little success at the end of the game. I know it was garbage time, but hopefully that all helps the Emmanuel quickly portion of this roster.
Yeah, I think part of his issue is that he's just like not a very physically imposing or strong player right now. So when his kind of craft gets taken away from him, the foul drawing, you know, in the past, in the regular season, guys jump at Emmanuel quickly pump fakes. They react when he, you know, pump fakes, pretends to get a shot up to the basket. And this game, nobody left their feet. Quickly was throwing pump fake after pump fake, and no one bit on it. I'm sure that has to be a part of their scouting report, but it definitely rattled him that he just couldn't deceive a single person.
Yeah.
and he got in his head a little bit. So, hopefully, to your point, that coming home, seeing the ball go through the basket is going to change just sort of his whole approach, because the Knicks desperately need him. We've seen that they can win when he has a bad game like they did in game 1, but the role players, Josh Hart was that guy in game 1.
Yeah, he filled his the absence we were getting from quickly in game 1.
And Josh Hart couldn't do that in game 2. He's coming back from this injury. It was a game-time decision. You know, he's probably playing off adrenaline at this point, but you know, and hopefully we see that fully healthy Josh Hart later in the series. But
a couple more days away, and hopefully he's back to him, because what he provides is great.
Yes. I'd say like on the defensive side of the ball, the Knicks defense was mostly good. I'd say Darius Garland presented the biggest issue. Clearly he had. Mm-hmm. He had 32 points on just 17 shot attempts.
Yeah.
He got to the free throw line at will. He was 6 of 10 from 3. And then passing the ball, Donovan Mitchell, his 13 assists to 2 turnovers, that's wildly impressive for a guy who is not really touted for his
He does some of that, sure, but he'll make the smart play, but he not known for that kind of assist. And particularly assist to turnover number.
Yeah, he was just making the right play. Like the Knicks were getting the ball out of his hands, and Mitchell just kept making the right play. That the team and the Cavs in general were just finding the open guy. You know, Isaac Okoro played for the first 2 minutes and 45 seconds, and that's when it kind of looked like, oh, the Knicks they're running back the same game plan from game one, and it's probably going to work again. They're going to force these role players to beat them. And Isaac Okoro was quickly subbed out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you just had guys. I mean, Caris LeVert played 40 minutes. In game one, LeVert was garbage. He's one of these streaky guys who can really turn it on, or he can be a huge negative. But, you know, LeVert was tough. I will say that the Cavs in general were just targeting Jalen Brunson on defense. They're putting him in pick and roll after pick and roll after pick and roll. They're trying to exhaust him, I think, but also he's for whatever reason, that wasn't as big of an issue in game one. I thought that Brunson played one of his best defensive games of his Knicks career in game one, and he just didn't play at that level. But there were just holes all over. Julius Randle was abysmal on the defensive end, just didn't seem to have it. I guess one question I have for you is, Danny Green played 20 minutes. I don't think it was all... certainly wasn't all garbage time. He got real substantial time.
He was
time.
In at one point, at least for a stretch early.
I wonder if that's going to be the move, if Isaac Okoro is going to be just kind of relegated to a bench role. And yeah, Danny Green...
Or just out of... He could just be out.
He could be out.
Like 3 minutes and we didn't see him again yesterday. So
I said after game one that I thought Ricky Rubio was done for the series because he was just so bad and so detrimental to their team. So they're just kind of looking for the role players that could fill in. I mean, Jetty Osman, 1-for-7 from three. The Knicks, again, were just daring him to shoot. He wasn't an issue. It was really, I mean, Danny Green kind of just provided a steadying presence where you can't leave him open on the perimeter, right? Like you can completely leave Okoro. Osman has to like prove to you that he can beat you. And even LeVert, like he's not a great 3-point shooter. Last night he was 4-of-9. From three, and actually statistically he's having a good 3-point shooting season, but these are all guys that you're just like, prove it. Danny Green, you can't really leave, so yeah,
if you leave him open, he'll confidently take a shot.
Yes. So I don't know, I'm wondering if the Cavs actually found some stuff rotation wise that's gonna help him going forward and make him more difficult to guard.
Had forgotten Danny Green like went back there. He'd only played 7 games for the Cavs this season. So I felt less bad about having forgotten that when a minute later they read that on the MSG broadcast. But yeah, it seems like they made the first like big personnel adjustments with Rubio also kind of out of the rotation in getting Okoro and him out of there for the most part. So credit to them for making that and it thoroughly working in this game.
I think we could probably dig a little bit more into Garland and like how he was defended. You know, obviously RJ Barrett starts on him each game. That is just, we knew going in that was going to be a tough matchup for RJ. I don't know that he did any worse of a job as anybody else did. Like it didn't really stand out to me that he in particular was bad.
In hindsight, like
but that is a hard matchup for him. No question. Tough. Like, again, we knew that coming into the series. But it's not like the Knicks have a ton of options, you know, especially if Josh Hart is feeling hobbled in any way, right? Yeah. But you know, Quentin Grimes is going to guard Donovan Mitchell. When Quentin Grimes is out, it's probably Josh Hart on Donovan Mitchell. And it's just that only gives you so many options for Garland. We did see Deuce McBride come in for just 2.5 minutes. Some of that was garbage time.
I thought they might go to that sooner, or at least I would have liked to, even if it was right when garbage time was real, I guess. But they waited a while to hit that button. I just thought, let's see it at some point. I thought they would do it earlier in this game, just that's kind of what Deuce, theoretically, his role would be. I don't think it would have made a discernible difference in the result of this game, but it would have been worth checking out sooner just to... see?
Yeah, I know he got like, it was like one possession's worth of defense against Darius Garland. Either that was in the first half or the third quarter. And he, I mean, really, again, it was one possession, but he gave Darius Garland trouble, more trouble than he had the rest of the game. And that, you know, that's not small sample size stuff. That's what Deuce McBride does. Yeah. Before the series,
that's like the scouting report coming in. Exactly. This is like, all right, he could be like our point of attack defender.
Exactly.
That's what he'll do.
Like before the series, I wrote a preview for Knicks Film School, and one of my five questions I had was like, is Deuce McBride going to play even a minor role in this series? Because the Knicks point of attack defense is not that strong, and the Cavs backcourt is among the best in the league, if not the best in the league. So like, I wasn't suggesting that Deuce needs to play even 10 minutes a game. I think that might be a little much, especially when the offense was as big of a problem as it was in game two. But using Deuce is kind of a changeup to just throw him in for like 3-4 minutes. Yeah.
Give some different look.
Make him uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Make Garland super uncomfortable.
If it gets him out of whatever rhythm, even if you get him back out of there 3 minutes later, I think that's worth trying out.
Just unleash Deuce. Like, tell him, hey, you're only getting a few minutes. Go all out. Like, you expend all your energy in these few minutes. You know, do it in a smart way. Don't go fouling everybody, but like,
don't put us in trouble.
But really dig in and get into guys' jerseys and make them uncomfortable, get them out of that rhythm, like you said. And I would be interested to know if that's even on Tibbs' radar going forward, because this backcourt is really freaking good. And Jalen Brunson is someone that we're trying to hide at all times.
That has been, you know, all last offseason when we thought we were the ones that would get Donovan Mitchell, part of the discussion around that was him and Brunson on defense together would be pretty brutal. Like, we've known this could be an issue. So we gotta work around what Brunson's limitations on that end of the floor are. He's been so valuable for us in basically every other way. And it's not to say he doesn't play smart. He just is limited on that end. It's a skill that he does not possess.
Yeah, and I don't want to suggest that, like, we panic and change our rotations and like do all this just reacting to one game. But like I said, even before the series, this was kind of on my radar, and it just like matchup wise kind of makes sense. And Deuce played a good amount during the regular season, right? When there were injuries, when anything like that was going on, and he played against the Cavs and did well against the Cavs specifically. So, I don't think it's crazy to posit that he could get some time here and actually make a difference. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm
particularly if Hart's still hobbled at all come game three, you'd at some point I think we could get something like that.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested to see how Tibbs handles that. But yeah, overall, like, I know a lot of people were pointing to the whistle in that first half, that it was a rough whistle for the Knicks, and I know if our other co-hosts Kenny and Greg were on here, like, they were in particular very upset about how that was being called. There were some super questionable calls. It's just I think they'd probably agree with this too. It wasn't the reason that the Knicks lost.
No,
the game.
It's just not pleasant when that's happening along with everything else that was happening on both ends of the floor for the Knicks. So you hope that evens out in a game and it goes the Knicks' way. And I'm not going to be upset if that actively helps the Knicks win their next game. So hope they can take advantage of an evening out there of sorts. Don't know if it's coming.
But big picture, like if people told us before the series, hey, you're going to go home 1-1, you got home court advantage coming back to MSG, I think that most Knicks fans would take that every time.
Ultimately, they landed where we would have asked. You get one of these wins in Cleveland, and you know, it is unfortunate that the one loss was of this variety and so thoroughly a beating. But overall, you got the one win you needed. And you get to come back with home court advantage on their side, particularly against this Cavs team that's been so good on their home floor and less successful on the road.
Yeah, I think overall, we don't, like we said, we don't want to panic. There was some dispiriting stuff in that game too, but yeah, you know, stuff that, like, now we know. I'm looking at like a stat from, this is Dan Devine of Yahoo Sports, and he tweeted, according to Second Spectrum, after not blitzing Jalen Brunson at all in game one on the pick and roll, the Cavs did it 9 times in game two, and the Knicks scored just 5 points on those plays, creating turnovers. And so, like, now the Knicks have to know, be ready to be blitzed, put guys in positions to be able to exploit that. You're getting 2 on the ball. The problem is, like, Jalen Brunson is a shorter point guard, right? So he's not able to, like, see over that.
Yeah.
Especially if you're having a big come up to set a screen, then you're going to have a big guy blitzing, you know, like an Evan Mobley type blitzing Jalen Brunson. That's a problem. But the Knicks used a lot of guard screening actions to try and get Donovan Mitchell involved or Darius Garland involved in the action. So there should be some opportunities to it's up to Tibbs. Yeah. It's Tibbs' job, figure out a way to beat this blitzing defense, because it was definitely an issue in game two.
Absolutely. They and on the offensive end, it's kind of clear what else they need, and that's just contributions from anyone that's not Brunson and Randall, as far as just big picture what they need. Any of those guys get hot quickly, Grimes, RJ, Hart gets hot again. If we can get somebody else actually contributing, they'll be in a much better place.
And I think a lot of those guys do well in transition. Like, RJ kind of struggles in transition a bit, but, you know, Quentin Grimes, I feel like, is very good in transition. Obi Toppin, obviously. Mm-hmm. Josh Hart is a monster in transition. So
trust them.
Any way that the Knicks can just speed up a bit with that second unit, push the pace, and, you know, set up the offense before the Cavs can set up their defense, which is the number one ranked defense in the league. Like, you got to try and score before they set up and get set. Otherwise, you might be in trouble. So there's definitely some areas for improvement. Are you feeling optimistic for game 3 at MSG on Friday?
I am. I mean, offensively, I don't see how they could play any worse. I think the home court will do our role players a lot of favors. And they got, like we said, the road win they needed. So I'm excited to see him in action again. I feel as optimistic as I think I'm capable of.
My only trepidation here is that the Knicks weren't a very good home team. And I think a lot of that is chalked up to during the regular season, like, opposing teams get to come to the Garden and feed off the energy and play in this historic arena, and they get excited. They want to show out for the New York City crowd. I do feel like the playoffs could be a little different, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the,
and particularly with this Cavs team that has, like, home road disparities with them. Like, if it was just another team, I wouldn't say that coming home is as inherent an advantage, but I think it'll do them at least some good.
I agree. I'm also feeling pretty good. To your point, the Cavs were 31-10 at home. I mean, that's a very good home record. That is extremely good. And then they're below 500 away. So this is not a team that like to travel very much. Plenty to be optimistic about. I think we could probably wrap it up there. We'll look to check in again at some point over the weekend.
Hope so. Hopefully it's a win.
All right, BBD, thanks for hopping on, man. If you're listening to this, we appreciate you. Make sure you follow us, subscribe to us on YouTube, follow us on Instagram, Twitter.
Tell a friend.
Tell a friend. You have
a friend. This exists. You checked out a Knicks show.
You have friends.
You've got friends. So
prove it.
Go tell somebody you liked this discussion about Knicks game 2.
We're putting out breakdowns, all that fun stuff on our various channels. So yeah, check us out there. Yeah. Until then, hey, let's go Knicks.
Knicks tape.
Ball in Play 2, presented by DraftKings, kicks off on May 5th. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to catch Game 1. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code WAREHOUSE. That's promo code WAREHOUSE only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.